What's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Eli Cooper, and I'm joined by the great Mike Badzig once again. How's it going, man?
Good. It's good to be with you again. And we have actual basketball to talk about. Basketball that actually happened, not just predictions. So pretty awesome.
Yes, finally, for once, basketball is back. Once again, these guys are on their home courts. Still no fans. But it's comforting to see them on their home courts at least. And so I think we should actually kick off with something I didn't prepare you for.
Oh, geez.
And it's a running joke that we have on this podcast. James Harden.
Yes.
In a strip club. Okay, so apparently it wasn't a strip club. Apparently,
I'm sure.
He says it was a party for a friend who started a business.
Okay.
And pictures are up, and now he has to quarantine for 6 days. He's going to lose every game check for each game that he misses. Last night got postponed because multiple players were in contact tracing. But, of course, James Harden being at a strip club was the headline that everybody loved to enjoy yesterday. So that was a fun start to the season, right?
Yeah, well, it is. And he actually – I think he's hurting his trade stock as well. Like, he wants these teams to trade for him. But, like – well, first the report about him throwing the ball to the teammate, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think we're kind of finding out he's sort of a weird dude. Like, not weird like Kawhi either. Like, weird like kind of a douche. And it seems like that's kind of how it's trending with him. And now going to a strip club – or not a strip club, but a party with no mask on. And, you know, it's one thing. I'm not the mask police I'm not condemning everyone for doing whatever they do, but like when you're in the NBA and the protocols are clearly set and you basically say, I don't care about those protocols because I don't care about playing anyway. I think the rest of the league is looking at him and his teammates probably now, especially are looking at him like, dude, what is your problem?
Right.
So I am losing fandom for James Harden. Not that I ever was the biggest James Harden guy, but the respect is dwindling.
Yeah, and it's you know, it's kind of sad because I don't think he's ever really had this kind of a reputation before. It's just something that we're kind of seeing now, and it's I wonder if it's because he wants out, you know what I mean, and he's frustrated that he's not out, and that frustration is now boiling over into other things. Like, so he even posted on his Instagram story to try to clarify what actually happened, because you know, everyone was saying it was a strip club, and that's where he went on and said it was a meeting or whatever, or a party for a friend that started a business. And even in those words, just reading that, you could kind of like, you know, read between the lines, the frustration that's there with everything that's happening with him right now. And I think just as a person, he's kind of at a boiling point. He's not where he wants to be. And I think that's frustrating him. And that kind of stuff is what we're seeing now. It's not going to get any better with him having to miss six game checks at like, I think he makes like 240K per game. That adds up.
Yeah, it does. And the thing is too, that bothers me about it is like, I don't think Houston would be that bad with him. You know, I think without him, they're a, you know, fringe 8, 9, 10 seed probably. But like with him, I think they're a playoff team. I think they're probably in that 5, 6 seed range. Which is about where he was last year. So I don't think that this is like, you know, where he just says this team is so bad, I refuse to play with these guys. Like, you know, and obviously we don't know a lot with John Wall and Boogie and how they're going to look. But like Christian Wood, I think is legit. I think Christian Wood and James Harden together, ignoring John Wall and Boogie, could be a pretty formidable duo. So that's the thing that bothers me is like, I think they actually had a chance to be pretty good. And now he's just throwing it away. I do not like that at all.
Yeah, same. However, there were teams that actually played basketball this week. We should probably get to them.
Probably, yeah.
So it was everyone's opening night on Wednesday and Tuesday. We had one good game, right?
Yes.
in those two games, we had the Warriors and the Nets who kicked it off. And the Nets, like from the jump, didn't play any games in this one. It was surprising to me, a team that really, if you think about it, is almost brand new to each other, right? They have a lot of guys who haven't played together, including their two best players, and Kyrie and KD have never played together before. You have a whole new head coach, someone who's never coached in the NBA before, and they look like the well-oiled machine in this one. And granted, the Warriors don't have a ton of experience playing together either with all the moving parts that they have, but they look like a well-oiled machine, especially on the offensive end. So what were your thoughts on that opening game?
Yeah, this was never a close – I mean, this was never in doubt. From really the opening 4 minutes, you knew that the Nets just had their foot on the neck of the Warriors. They really didn't stand a chance. Yeah. And I think the biggest thing is KD, right? He's the story here. He does not look like he is missing a beat at all. Obviously,
no, not
first
at all.
Game and it's going to be a long season. We'll see how much he plays and the load that he takes on. But, like, this game anyway, he looked like KD with no restrictions at all, basically. And then Kyrie next to him, really Kyrie, he actually might have played better than KD.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he probably did. But obviously we're focused on KD coming back off the injury. But, like, I'm not ready to throw the Nets in the championship yet. I still think that there are some things, Kyrie might probably is going to miss some time at some point, right? He normally misses some time during the year. And we still are wondering about the KD injury. But from this game, I don't know if you want me to talk about the Warriors, because I probably will not be too kind to your Warriors, because they look bad. But, I think if we're looking at this, we probably should have not expected too much, unless Steph is putting up crazy numbers like you had thought he will, and he still might. I mean, it's not his first game, right? And this wasn't this is a lineup that hasn't played together much. He didn't have Draymond. Obviously, Clay's not going to be there at all this year. But I think there are some promising things, right? I think James Wiseman, I kind of liked how he looked. He's bigger than I think people expected.
Yeah.
Very athletic. Like, I think him and Curry could work well in pick-and-roll situations. And Curry, the thing is, too, he was pretty much – he's still able to get by his guy. He's still – he had all the same moves. It's just, the shots weren't falling quite like they used to. But I think that could change at the drop of a hat. So I'm not ready to write off the Warriors. I'm not ready to put the Nets in the championship. But this game, anyway, was about Kevin Durant and looking like the old Kevin Durant.
Agreed, man. This one, to me, was said more about the Nets than it did the Warriors, because they kind of hit the ground running, which is what I wanted to see. I also wanted to see how they were going to run their offense with these two. I was really impressed by the ball movement, which is something that I don't typically say about a team that has Kyrie Irving on it. Last night he didn't dribble the air out of the ball at all. There was not one possession where I was like, dude, give the ball up. He was quick, decisive. The ball moved quickly from side to side, and they got easy shots. And obviously, there's going to be times, right, where they're going to have to play their ISO ball, late in stretches of important games. But and that's where they'll kind of have to figure out is like, who's going to be the guy in those situations. It should be KD, but it can also be Kyrie. But to me, throughout the first three quarters is where you want to see of a typical game, is where you want to see them sharing the ball, playing off of each other well, and good off the ball movement, which is what I saw last night. And that's typically the Warriors' strong point, right? Is the motion offense, the ball movement, getting guys open looks. But yesterday, that was the Nets' strong suit. So, that was what I was most impressed about. Obviously, I'm still concerned about, their health. That's the biggest thing. I picked these guys to make it to the finals in our last episode. And I felt pretty good after watching that performance on opening night. The biggest thing is not just health throughout the season, but health in the postseason. Because just when I watch those two guys, when I watch Kyrie and Kevin, it's hard for me to see a scenario where both of those guys are off for four games out of a series. You know what I mean? And I think that's what you're really going to need, especially KD, who's still unguardable at this point.
Yeah,
and
right.
That's why I wasn't really super concerned about him coming off the Achilles, because even though he's a freak of nature, his game's not predicated on his athleticism. Really, as far as his movement, kind of. But at the end of the day, he could just pull up and shoot over you when he wants to. So as long as he can move, as long as he can move at all, he's a threat to be an incredible scorer. I was actually kind of intrigued by their starting lineup too. Dinwiddie started, and they went with Joe Harris at the three, and KD was at the four, which that part isn't super surprising to me, but Dinwiddie in the starting lineup along with Kyrie was. I thought they might go Caris LeVert since he's more of an off-the-ball scorer. And maybe that changes depending on, you know, what they're playing each, you know, or whatever. But, like, Caris LeVert coming off your bench and leading that second unit is scary. Their second unit is scary. It's LeVert. They had, and I guess, you know.
Jared Allen, Shamet.
Yeah, Shamet. Dinwiddie will probably mix in with his second unit as well.
Yeah.
Then they have Prince. Jeff Green can give you strong minutes. So, like, they have multiple guys on that bench who would be starters on a lot of NBA teams, including Prince. You know, LeVert would start on a lot of teams. Yeah. So, like,
they have multiple guys on their bench who probably should be starting on their team, right? Like, Jared Allen is better than DeAndre Jordan. I think, you know, obviously he's tight with KD and Kyrie, so he gets the nod, but Jared's going to play more minutes and probably be their finishing guy.
Right, exactly. So, but regardless, like, they're going to have a rim protector on the floor at all times and a pick and roll presence on the floor at all times and a guard who can score at will at all times. So it's just like, that's tough. My biggest thing though is going to be their defense. And I wonder against tougher opponents, who's going to be their, who they put on every team's best player. Like, Joe Harris is a solid defender, but, like, I don't necessarily want him guarding Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown.
No.
You know what I mean? And I don't know that there's a guy on this roster that does that. And maybe that's something that they do sometime throughout the season before the trade deadline or whatever. Maybe that's a move that they end up making. That would be the one flaw that I kind of see with this team. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, but the depth is probably the thing that, besides KD looking like himself, like, the depth stuck out where it's like they never had anybody that you're like, what is this guy doing on the court right now? Like, their 8, 9, 10 guys are Jeff Green, Taurean Prince, and Landry Shamet. Like, those are bona fide role players in the league. Like, you know, starters on a lot of teams. So, they're deep. They're scary, man.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm not panicking on the Warriors yet. One, I thought this was a very tough matchup for a team that hasn't had a lot of time to play together. You know, and granted, the Brooklyn's going through the same thing, but if you think about it, you know, most of those guys were playing together except for KD and Kyrie. And with two guys that talented, you know, how much time do they really need? And they do actually have USA team experience together. So, like, there's some chemistry there and they know each other, right? So, like, there's already some kind of chemistry there. For the Warriors, no Draymond. So really the only person that Curry has played with on a consistent basis that stepped on the floor last night was Kevin Looney.
He didn't play much. Yeah.
Right. And he played 11 minutes. So, like, the rest of these guys, he played like less than 10 games with. And it showed. The ball movement and their motion offense did not look the same. I don't expect him to shoot 2 for 10 from three, like you mentioned.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he's going to shoot the ball better. I don't even, as bad as Andrew Wiggins is, I even expect him to be better. Like, 4 for 16 is unrealistic. He's not going to be that bad on a typical night. And neither is Kelly Oubre, who went 3 for 14. So, like, they just shot the ball really bad on this opening night. So, you know, I'm not going to write them off completely. And I think Draymond will make them better defensively.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it wasn't a good start, but James Wiseman did impress me. I thought he looked really good. He looked the best out of all the rookies, in my opinion, so far. And what really impressed me the most was he knocked down two jump shots, one of them being a three, the only three he took. His form isn't great. But, like, he's a center. He doesn't necessarily need to shoot it with good form. It just needs to go in. But that's the part where if he has a pick and pop game with Steph, that he could at least be a threat to shoot from there. Because he did show he can put the ball on the floor, you know, so where he can get guys to on late closeouts, that shot fake, you know, and blow by. If he has that in his game, that pick and pop could be scary. And I actually think, the Warriors might have to run their offense a little bit differently without Clay and run more pick and rolls and less of the motion, because I don't think that's where Wiggins and Oubre will thrive.
Right.
Because they're not used to playing that style.
Yeah, and And I will say, last thing on this game, because we do have – there was a ton of games. But
yeah.
This Warriors team, and I'm not going to write them off, and I don't want to write your boys off yet. But I will say, like, looking at this box score, looking at these guys on this Warriors, you know, who played for the Warriors, like, besides Steph, of course, it's a pretty bad group of guys. Like, it's not ideal. You know, if Steph is not Steph, they've got, you know, second worst team in the West potential. But if, you know, if Steph can be Steph, which I think he will be closer to Steph than he was last night or Tuesday night. Sorry. I think they'll have a chance, but it's going to be tough. He's going to have to carry a load.
Yeah. He's definitely going to have to carry a load. So we'll see how that goes for the Warriors. I'm nervous, but neither of us is writing them off. So let's get to the Wednesday night games and talk about some teams that impressed us. So give me one team that surprised you last night.
The Jazz. And this was a team, I think I was the only guy who took the over on the Jazz in our pod.
That's
great. They seem to click a little bit better with Mitchell and Connolly, and Jordan Clarkson gave him really good minutes. And then Gobert was a freaking beast, right? Gobert went for 20 and 17, like, just kind of owned the paint, made it hard for Dame or CJ to drive and do anything inside. So I think, like, if they can play like that and it's well-balanced, because you know, we talked about Donovan Mitchell, and I don't think Donovan Mitchell is he's Spider-Man. He's not Superman, right? He's not going to if you're asking him to go crazy every night and carry you to wins, I don't think that's going to happen. In fact, I think if he even tries, it probably is going to end up in losses more often than not.
Right.
Even if he goes for 40, you probably might still lose just based on the way you're playing. I think if the Jazz come with a balanced approach with all of these guys, because they've got guys, you know, and Royce O'Neal, who I always am hating on, he had 28 minutes and 0 points and zero assists. So I don't quite understand why he's starting over Joe Ingles. Maybe they just like Joe Ingles coming in on that bench unit with Jordan Clarkson, but that really worked, those two together with Derek Favors. So the Jazz were the team, you know, I think we might talk about the Hawks later who also impressed, but the Jazz really impressed. Who do you got?
Yeah. For me, the team that really impressed me the most was the Magic.
Yes.
It's coming out, beating the Heat, who are coming off an NBA Finals loss in the opener. And you know what? This Magic team has looked good throughout the preseason. You know, they're shooting the ball well. They shot 47% from the field last night, about 48%. And, you know, they have a nice bit of depth. And remind you, you know, mind you, this is no Mo Bamba yet. Still no Jonathan Isaac, which are two key guys to you defensively. And Mo Bamba's wasn't an injury. That was a coach's decision. So I wonder what's going on there. But, you know, no Jonathan Isaac. Cole Anthony did look good off the bench, only played about 19 minutes, but had 6 points, 6 assists, shot it well. Fultz, who just got paid, looked pretty decent. Didn't shoot it well, but was good in other areas. And then your guy, Fournier, 5 points, 9 for 13 from the field, shot it really well. So he earned his 31 minutes. Last night, and granted, these are the kind of performances we can get. You may get from him, you know, but it's not consistent, and that's the biggest issue. So, you know, I'm not like all in on the Orlando Magic just yet. But I was impressed. That's a good win on opening night.
Yeah, and it is, and you know, I'm not buying Magic stock based on this win because it was Evan Fournier reliant, and I feel like he is not gonna repeat that. Probably, you know, next game he'll come out and play those same 31 minutes and go 0-for-8 or something. So, you know, I'm not sure that I would buy into it, but I thought Aaron Gordon was really good, you know, kind of like easing into who he is going to be in the league, right? Maybe he's not going to be the superstar that we had first thought, or he at first thought, but like he can play this role of this guy who gets 20 and 7 and plays good defense. I kind of like him there. And Fultz has been solid. And T. Ross off the bench, former Raptor, my guy. I think the Heat were kind of disappointing. I was surprised with what the Heat did. They started Tyler Hero at point guard. And maybe that's something with Dragic, still kind of note that nagging foot. Maybe they wanted to limit him a little bit. But nobody really was impressive. I don't know if they're like, you know, it almost looked kind of like tired. Yeah. Like they're not quite ready to be back. Bam was the only guy who was impressive. You know, you don't want to buy into it too much and write off the Heat or say anything like that. But like, I wonder about the fatigue, especially if Dragic isn't 100%, and they're leaning on Tyler Hero as the point guard. I don't really think he's a point guard. Would you agree with that? You're more of a guard expert, but he's more of an off guard for me anyway. And Mo Harkless was supposed to be the big pickup that, you know, played really well and shot the three, and he didn't really do anything. So I was kind of disappointed in the – I was disappointed in the Heat. The other team that I was – you know, this game was a disappointment and also an impressed flip side, and that was my Raptors.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it was just not there in the second half. Pretty good first half. You know, started out well. And then they just could not make shots in the second half. Only scored 42 points in the second half. Fred VanVleet gave him all the money. He scored 9 points in 30 minutes. So, like, that's a bad start. I mean, I think Fred is better than that, and he'll improve. So I'm not buying into this game too much. It's another one. I don't want to buy too much stock. I don't want to buy too much stock in any of these games. But to only score 9 points, and really, you know, we're leaning on Kyle Lowry and Siakam for the bulk of the offense, that's probably going to be a problem. I think Fred needs to be the leading scorer or the second leading scorer behind Siakam on this team for them to have any kind of success this year.
Agreed.
If he doesn't, he's going to have to put it this way. If he doesn't average 22 or 23 points, the Raptors are going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
And the big guys was scary too. Aaron Baines was just, you know, he's a big guy who plays in the league. He's an average big guy, right? But he's not Marcus Gasol. He's not Serge Ibaka. And then the bench depth was just, like, kind of atrocious. Like, when you have Matt Thomas playing 20 minutes, and, like, I like Matt Thomas. He's a great shooter. But he's not a 20-minute NBA player. He's not Landry Shamet. He's not Luke Kennard. He's really not one of those guys.
Right.
So I was kind of sad. I was disappointed to see how many minutes he was getting, especially when Terrence Davis only got three. Obviously, he's got some stuff going on.
Yeah.
But I was disappointed in the Raptors, but I was impressed with the Pelicans and how well they clicked, especially in the second half. Because I think one of the concerns was, you know, when you have B.I. and Zion and Steve Adams, you know, when you come down the stretch, how does it work having those three big guys in there together? B.I. and Zion was a question alone. And then you add in Steve Adams to the mix to clog things up. But it worked. And Brandon Ingram kind of went off, you know, 24, 11, and 9 is really impressive on opening night. And Zion, 15 and 10, I think that's what they're looking for. JJ had 23 off the bench. Like, the Pelicans were impressive.
Yeah.
You know, so I think they're one of the teams I was most impressed with, and the Raptors kind of the opposite.
Yeah, the Pelicans impressed me as well. I was interested to see how, you know, the Zion and Brandon Ingram dynamic worked with Steven Adams now being included in that front court as well. And it did look good. You know, Brandon Ingram probably isn't going to have too many 11 assist games,
no.
But if you can get him in that 23, like I would say even as low as like 21, 22 to 25 range and still keeping Zion in that 20 to 25 range.
Yeah.
They're scary in the West with
oh, that yeah. much firepower. Yeah, I'd much rather have B.I. go for 24 and 11 assists than go for 40 and 2 assists, because that means Zion probably wasn't too involved. And
right, exactly. Yeah, definitely. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic to watch. They started Bledsoe and Lonzo. So, yeah. Like, really not a lot of shooting in that starting lineup. You know, obviously you're going to bring J.J. and guys like Josh Hart off of the bench to provide that. And even Melly, who gives you like a stretch big off of the bench. But, you know, it makes me wonder, like, when it comes late in games, is that five going to work? You know, they didn't really have to worry about it too much on this one, but that will be something that they'll have to kind of figure out as well.
Yeah. And those are really the only three. I mean, Melly's kind of a bigger guy, but like, as far as like, you know, Zion and Steven Adams was pretty much it. Melly only played 14 minutes. So like, I think they're kind of just going to rotate Adams, Ingram, Zion at the, you know, Ingram being the three if they're all three in, and then Ingram being the four and one of the other two at the five, or no Ingram and they're the four or five. Like, those would probably be the three, and then you just kind of mix in Bledsoe, Ball, Redick, and Hart and try to make it work.
You know who else looked really good? The Hawks.
Amazing.
I mean, well, for one, Trae Young was incredible in his debut. 10 for 12, 5 for 6 from 3, 37, 6 and 7. Now, granted, this Bulls team doesn't play a lick of defense.
No.
So, again, I'm taking this with a grain of salt. But all five starters in double digits, two guys off the bench in double digits. Like, they just have so much firepower. They ended up bringing both Bogdanović and Huerter off the bench. Mm-hmm. And going with Cam Reddish and Hunter in their starting lineup, which I like.
I love it.
I think those two give you the best combination of offense and defense, since you have kind of – and then they had Gallinari and Collins in the front court, and I think that's because Capella is still dealing with an issue.
Yeah.
No Okongwu in this one. So those are two pieces that you're going to have to add back into the mix, and we'll see how that affects their rotation. But yeah. I would like to see them keep either Reddish or Hunter in their starting lineup. I think you need, if not both, I think you need at least one of those two to kind of give you that perimeter defense that you're going to need when you, especially when you play against tougher teams. And then I like Huerter off the bench.
I like Huerter off the bench.
I really like his game. So
yeah,
I'm not the kind of person who overreacts to one game, like most of NBA Twitter, but, the Hawks were impressive.
No, I loved the Hawks' performance, and I loved the decision. And I think we knew that they were going to do this, was start DeAndre Hunter, because you mentioned like DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish give you the best mix of offense and defense. Really, they give you the only mix of offense and defense because the other guys don't play any defense.
Right.
But DeAndre Hunter does. Like, if you're talking about like, oh, the Hawks, they don't have anybody you can put on someone's best player. DeAndre Hunter is that guy. And we were, coming out of Virginia, like, that was it with him. It was all about the defense. So I liked the decisions. I liked the lineup decisions. And then Trey, obviously, if he plays this way, he's going to set a bunch of records if he keeps playing that way. But it's probably it's not going to happen. But, if they can find a good mix, they really didn't even ask anybody else to do too much. It was kind of just piecing it together. All over. Now, I think the Bulls kind of suck. I think I was under on them because I don't love the fit of this team right now. And maybe it's something that works itself out over the season and they improve. I think they probably will improve. Kobe White had a bad game. Wendell Carter had a bad game. So they'll probably get better. But the Hawks, when they get Okongwu back from injury, and he slips in there, coming off the bench, that's going to provide another lift of big guys off the bench that they really don't have right now. So I would expect them to even get better yet. So I don't even think the Hawks are done.
Yeah, agreed. Can I talk about a player that impressed me?
You might.
RJ Barrett.
Yes, RJ.
RJ Barrett was great. It didn't translate into a win. But RJ Barrett was great. 11 for 15 last night, 3 for 3 from the three. And I think that's the most important thing, is because that's his biggest downfall, is he's a very inconsistent shooter. And when I say inconsistent, I mean that shit broke. But last night, 3 for 3 from three. If he has improved in that aspect of his game, I think we see a leap this year. Last year he had a typical rookie year, for a guy who's on a really bad team. 14, points, 5 boards a game, but he shot it poorly, like only 40% from the field and 32% from the three. And as he was the third pick, like I think a lot of people forget, he was the third pick in that, draft class, and everyone was focused on Zion and Ja. But like, remember, coming out of high school, he was the number one recruit. Yeah. He was the guy. It was not – Zion was the most known guy, but he was the number one rated recruit coming out. And he kind of got lost in the shuffle behind those other two. But, I'm someone who still really like his game. Like, I think he handles it well. I think he's an underrated passer and playmaker and can get to the cup. The issue is, in today's NBA, you cannot just solely be a slasher. Like, you have to be able to knock shots down from the perimeter, whether it's the three or even if you're one of those guys like DeRozan and Jimmy Butler who can get whatever shot they want in the mid-range. You have to be able to hit perimeter jump shots to keep defenses honest. And if that's something that he added into his game this year, watch out Not for the Knicks, but for RJ Barrett.
Well, I love RJ Barrett, and coming in last year, I picked him for Rookie of the Year because I thought that his game was going to translate. It didn't last year, but I think, you know, he looked like he got a little bit stronger this year.
Yep.
And the shooting ability is the big thing, right? That was the big point of conversation, was is he going to learn how to shoot? Well, it looks like he was in the gym. You know, this was one game, so I'm not going to call him Steph yet, but you know, and then I was excited when you said RJ Barrett. So I don't even know if you know this, but last pod you had asked me about the Cavs as being my second team. It's actually the Knicks. I actually love the Knicks. I keep that low key. I don't tell anybody that.
But it's probably for the best.
When they had Melo and Amari, it was cool, but now it's like, yeah, kind of keep it low key. But I love the Knicks. I love RJ Barrett. And I kind of like low key. I kind of like what the Knicks have in a young core here with Mitchell Robinson and RJ Barrett. And of course, Obi, who went 3 of 3 from three. That was the only three shots he made, but he was 3 of 3 from three, which I think is a good sign, right? If we're thinking about Obi Toppin, and, you know, we think of the athletic and the slashing and the dunking. If he's a good 3-point shooter, he could be special.
Yes.
Right. Kevin Knox kind of fell off from what we thought it was going to be at first. But I don't think it's over for him.
No.
And looks like they're giving up on Frankie Smokes, Nicotia, but I actually still like him a little bit. But yes, I'm glad you brought up RJ Barrett. I was super impressed.
Yeah, same. Any other teams that impressed you?
Team wise, well,
or players.
Well, you know, this game, I was kind of interested in this game because I do cheer for the Cavs a little bit. And also I did want to see how the Hornets looked, because some people were actually higher on the Hornets. Our guy Taylor, he had them as a fringe sleeper playoff team almost. Yeah. And they got 42 out of Rozier, 28 out of Gordon Hayward, and they lost to the Cavs. So I think that tells us that they probably are not going to be that good this year. LaMelo Ball did nothing, just about nothing, in his 16 minutes. He had a couple of assists. That was it. But the Cavs, who I will claim as my third team, but that's as far as it goes. I only have three teams, so those are the three. Gotcha. Raptors, Knicks, Cavs. Now you guys know. So Colin Sexton. I love Colin Sexton. I think his game works in the NBA, in today's NBA. You know, quick, shifty. Shoot another guy. Got to work on the shooting ability. But it was pretty much there last night. He had 27. And then him and Garland together seemed to work. Yes. And Okora, actually, I think Okora had a case for best rookie performance last night. You know, he only scored 11 points. But he had 5 assists. He got 3 rebounds. And he played great defense, which is really what they brought him in for. And Larry Nance balled out last night. So I was impressed with my Cavs, and kind of, as expected, disappointed and don't think the Hornets are going to be much this year.
Yeah, I wasn't very high on the Hornets. Right. And, you know, LaMelo kind of has Ricky Rubio written all over him. I'm just going to say he has 6'8 Ricky Rubio written all over him.
Michael Carter Williams.
Yeah, or Michael Carter Williams written all over him. And, you know, that's what scares me the most, is that – the talent is there, like the vision's there, the height is there. But as a reporter friend of mine, he covers Ohio high school basketball, and he used to live out here in York and cover high school basketball. The guy Matt Gould, shout out to Matt Gould. He tweeted that, and obviously he was watching the Cavs game. He tweeted that he's never quite seen a player who is what's the word I'm looking for? Who doesn't want to hustle like LaMelo Ball. Like, LaMelo Ball has no motor, like, whatsoever on the defensive end, or when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. And that's where, you know, a lot of players, like, I don't care how great you are with the ball in your hands. And one, he's not that great with it as a scorer right now. He's a really good passer. That's about it. But he's not nearly good enough of a scorer for him to not be putting in the effort on the defensive end. So that concerns me about him. So obviously those were question marks coming into the draft that everyone knew about, but people were caught up in the flashy highlights and, you know, and things like that. LaMelo Ball is not quite the scorer that I think people thought he was. Yeah. And if Obviously, that's going and without him playing any defense, that's going to hurt him just in getting minutes, because Rozier and Devontae Graham are going to get after it on the defensive end, at least try, you know, right. Give the effort.
Try.
So like, right. So like, you know, if you're not even putting in the effort, how do you justify putting him on the floor when he can't score? So
I don't think you can. And I also think that his style kind of messes up other. Me and you both have kind of been against LaMelo for a while now, right? We were never on the hype train of LaMelo. We always kind of said that we didn't see this working out. And I could go into a rant right now about Gen Z and not having a motor and wanting things handed to them, but I will not do that. but I will say one guy who impressed was Ja, of course.
Yeah.
42 last night, 44 last night.
Just
snapped in a loss, right? So that's the thing is like, yeah, like he balled out. But like, and this is like, I also have like another working theory that like when guys go for 40 plus, 50 plus, it usually actually doesn't normally translate. It might translate to a win, but it's a closer game than maybe it would have been. I have a theory of, you know, guys going for crazy points and it doesn't actually translate to the team doing better. But so he had 44, super impressive. Like, he looks like he's taken the leap that we all kind of expected from him, to where he, you know, he could be a second, third team All NBA guy this year, and if he does, he might win Most Improved despite winning Rookie of the Year, which I don't think we've ever seen a guy win both of those in his first 2 years. Yeah. So I was impressed, but I also was impressed with the Spurs. DeMar DeRozan. DeMar, I said, the more I like it. 28-9-9, just kind of balled out. 0 threes, didn't even shoot one. Who needs them? Who needs the three-pointer when you're DeMar DeRozan? He was awesome. And, you know, they had, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys in double figures.
Yep.
So it looks like the Spurs are not going to pack it in for this season.
No, not at all. They went with an interesting lineup. Your boy was at the four, essentially, with the first five that they went in.
Yep.
And my guy Lonnie Walker played 34 minutes, 6 for 9, 3 for 4, had a disgusting poster on someone. Mm-hmm. 16 points, 6 boards. He looked really good. Keldon Johnson, the other wing that they took from Kentucky the year after they drafted Lonnie, also looked pretty good, 16 points, 5 for 10. So, you know, and obviously they're trying to get these guys on the floor. So they went with, they just like embraced small ball, LaMarcus at the five, and then went with these two guys on the wings and DeRozan kind of as your power forward person, you know,
right.
Or whatever you want to call that,
which I like,
I do too. And the floor spacing was there, for him and DeJounte Murray, who played really well as well, 21, 6, and 9 for him. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know what? The Spurs, who we thought might be packing it in, I think might fight for another playoff spot this year. Like, being that 8-seed race might get heated again this year.
And how dumb are we for even thinking that they wouldn't be in the mix?
Yeah, I don't think Greg Popovich has a bone in his body that isn't designed to coach to his best ability to get wins. There's just, as long as he's on the sidelines, the Spurs team is going to be competitive. It's
I do think that it helps that he has kind of taken his foot off the gas of the GM part, right? So he's not the GM anymore. He's, you know, he's probably making a lot of the decisions, sure. But I think that we've seen, and I've talked about this before in sports and all sports, really, when the head coach is also the GM, it usually does not work out.
No.
So unless you're Bill Belichick. So I'm glad to see him back off a little bit. Maybe that helps them.
Yeah. Agreed. Now, any teams that we haven't discussed so far that were disappointments for you on opening night?
Can I have a player who disappointed me?
Yes.
And this is actually going to sound weird, but it was Luka. Who had 32, 8, and 5, right? So on the surface, you're probably, if you just looked at the box score, you're like, wow, Luka was Luka last night. But he actually wasn't Luka last night. I actually thought that he might have been hurt in the first half for a while there. Like, he could not get by guys like we normally see. Like, a lot of screen and roll action, obviously, and that helped him free up a little bit. But, you know, the thing that we all came into this season looking for was him to improve in his shooting. I'm not saying he hasn't, right? Because it was only one game, but it certainly didn't show last night, right? I mean, 0 of 6 from 3. Still is having free throw issues. You know, if he didn't get better this year, right? So I think we're all looking at the Mavs, and if we're thinking that they're going to be a top three seed in the West or whatever, he's going to make a run at MVP. He had to have gotten better from last year because the roster really didn't get much better. I mean, you could argue Josh Richardson is an upgrade from Seth Curry just from a defensive standpoint. But when I watch both those guys play, I think I might rather have Seth just because of the shooting he gives you. Like, Josh is just not that type of a shooter. And Tim Hardaway, I think, who had a great season last year for his standards, that might have been an anomaly where he kind of regresses back to normal Tim Hardaway this year. And I'm not saying I hope that. I'm not saying that will happen. I'm just saying that it might make sense. You know, we see this all the time with guys who have a great year and then they kind of regress back to who we thought they were. Think about your fantasy football teams when you draft them. You guys who had a bad year last year, oh, maybe they'll regress to what they normally are. You know, I'd do the opposite. So maybe we see that. Now, KP wasn't there.
Yeah.
Obviously, he helps, right? He frees a lot of things up, just the size and the shooting he brings as well. So when he comes back, maybe it's a different story. But I was kind of disappointed in Luka, despite the big stat line.
Yeah, agreed. I didn't think he looked great. I thought the Suns looked pretty good. They're certainly better defensively. You know, holding that Mavs offense, which was one of the best in the league last year. And of course, you know, we know KP's not out. There's no more Seth Curry. But holding that team to 102 points in today's NBA is impressive. Chris Paul didn't look great, at least on the offensive end. But, you know, I still like the Suns. And I think the biggest thing that they kind of addressed was the defensive side of the ball. Like, now you're looking at Chris Paul, Miles Bridges, and Jay Crowder being in your starting lineup. Like, those are severe defensive upgrades from Ricky Rubio, Kelly Oubre, who's not a bad defender, but he ain't as good as Mikal Bridges. Sorry, I called him Miles. He's not as good as Mikal Bridges on the defensive end. Neither is Cam Johnson, who still was very good off the bench, 15 points and 5 boards.
That's our guy.
Yeah, I like Cam Johnson. Former Pitt and UNC player. I really like him in that stretch four role. I thought the new guy, Jalen Smith, who they surprisingly took with the 10th pick, looked good as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, Cameron Payne, even as is now sliding into that backup role, had 11 off the bench. I was impressed with the Suns on defense. I think their offense will get better. I think Ayton will be better. Chris Paul will be better. I was disappointed in the Mavericks. I was looking forward to seeing someone like Luka take a step forward. Other than that, the team that probably disappointed me the most, I would say would probably be – it's got to be the Bucks. Listen, you know, don't get me wrong. I thought, you know, this was not an easy win for them or anything like that, right? So, you know, the Celtics are a tough matchup for anybody, including them. And – The defensive side of the ball is what disappointed me, though. 122 points on opening night. When you just added Drew Holiday into the mix, you know, you're expecting DiVincenzo to be a bigger part, who's also a good defender. And you have the two-time defensive player of the year on your roster.
Totally agree.
You know, I thought they were suspect defensively, although they looked better offensively. I will give them that. They looked a lot better on the offensive side of the ball, which I know was something that they were concerned about. And it's one of the reasons they brought Drew Holiday in to replace Bledsoe, and he looked really good. Yes. But, you know, I think they'll be better defensively going forward. Maybe it's just the Celtics' night, even though they didn't have Kemba Walker.
Yeah.
Jason Tatum's a freaking stud. So, like, what – you know what I mean? And really –
So is Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, and so is Jaylen Brown. So, like, you know, both of those guys went for 30 last night. So maybe that's, you know, not something you're, you know, typically going to see on a nightly basis. But and maybe if Jason Tatum doesn't bank in a sidestep three, we're having a different discussion.
But well, that's what I was going to say when you said you're disappointed in the Bucks. Like, well, they really should have won. I mean,
right?
They didn't mean to bank it.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, I'm not disappointed in, you know, what they're going to be going forward. Just the defensive side of the ball, is where they're going to have to. They will be better, I think, than they were on opening night.
Yeah, I think so too. And I was surprised to see Marcus Smart, actually started. So my sixth man of the year pick might be out of the window. But I think, you know, if Kemba comes back, which they say is going to be a month, it might be longer. We'll see. Yeah. He'll go back to the bench. But, yeah, I mean, Drew looked good. Middleton and Giannis, like, if that's your big three, like, I think that was a pretty solid performance from you. You know, you get 87 points out of your big three.
Yeah.
You probably are expecting to win the game, but they just could not stop Brown or Tatum.
Yeah.
And then on that last, you know, that last shot, obviously, I don't think he meant to bank it, but that's basketball. That happens sometimes. And they won. But I think if we're looking at these two teams, we're probably saying, you know, I'm not ready to write off the Heat yet, so I'll say two of the four best teams, two of the four teams in the East that we think are, you know, the teams. If we throw the Sixers in, that's five. But, I mean, and they played like it last night. It was a very close game.
Yeah.
So I'm not shocked to see that it was a close game. I am shocked by how many points were scored. But maybe that's something that gets, you know, as the year goes on and things tighten up.
Agreed. So to close out today's show, we're going to do a little all-in or all-out segment.
Okay.
Now, before we get to that, remember, guys, use the promo code ALLINPOD at MyBookieAG, where you get 100% of your deposit match if you use that promo code, minimum of $45 and up to $1,000. You know, make sure you guys are using that promo code. That way they know we sent you there. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Make sure you guys leave comments. Give us your feedback on the show. And if you're listening on the audio version, make sure you hit the subscribe button. Make sure you're subscribing to us on whatever platform you listen on. And don't forget to leave a rating and a review as well. That stuff helps us pop up in searches. So anything you can do to help the podcast, we certainly appreciate. So all in or all out, we have some specific topics. And one of the teams that we're going to get to, or that we got into a little bit, is the Atlanta Hawks.
Yes.
Are we all in, let's say, on the Atlanta Hawks being a top five seed in the East? Are the Atlanta Hawks, are you all in or all out on them being a top five seed?
I'm all out on that. That's probably too high, because then we're talking about the four teams I just listed plus the Sixers. They got to jump one of those teams. I'm just not sure who it is. Because I do expect a lot out of the Sixers this year, and we're going to talk about them in here a second here. I don't think the Heat are going to drop off below them. So I think, you know, if they're the next team after that, you know, after what we saw from Toronto, I think that's definitely possible. I think I would go as high as to say that I might even, you know, like them sixth most in the East right now, you know, not including the Cavs, of course. I'm just kidding. But but the Pacers, too, have looked great. So I think there's a lot of teams in the, you know, that range in the East got better.
Yeah.
So kind of you have the same top teams in the East, but then that second tier now looks like it's improved.
Yeah.
So it looks like there's a couple of teams who could be fighting for those spots. I'm not ready to say top five seed. If you would have said top seven or top six seed, you might have got me.
Yeah. But
not quite.
Yeah. I don't know that I'm quite, there yet either. Although, you know, my Sixers kind of concerned me last night, even though I don't think the Wizards were in a cakewalk, but they concerned me, which we'll get to. I think there's a path for them to be a top five seed, just because offensively they might actually be that good. It's just a matter of whether they're going to be able to get enough stops. So for now, I'm going to say I'm all out on that. But I wouldn't be surprised, I should say.
Okay.
All right. So for my Sixers, are we all in or all out on the Ben and Joel as a duo? I know it's one game with a new coach, but all in or all out on this duo being able to make it work?
Well, I think I'm all in right now. And if, you know, if really the question is, if you're all in or all out, should they see it through this season or should they try to move Simmons for somebody like Harden? I would say I would not do that. And I would keep Simmons and I would see it out through the season. I liked, you know, obviously they probably had a good chance of losing last night. Really, you could argue that they could have or should have lost, but they finished the game well. And I think, you know, of all of the teams that they've had, you know, my, you know, obviously when Jimmy was there, he was able to handle things in the playoffs a little bit differently. So they're still going to miss that guy in the playoffs who's going to be the wing player who goes and gets the bucket, as I always say. But I think, you know, if we're talking about the supporting cast, this is the best one they've had together that fits them the best, right? And it didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that you should put shooting around these two guys who can't really shoot, but right. can, you know what I mean, but can score inside and drive and play in the post. So, you know, and Danny Green didn't do much last night, but I think his presence helps. Seth Curry did a little bit more. Shake Milton, who I laugh at Shake Milton sometimes because I remember whenever they inserted him into the starting lineup last year, and I don't think you did, but I think a lot of Philadelphia people were like, oh, Shake Milton, he's going to save the day. Like, yeah. you know, he's going to change things. And that didn't happen because he's Shake Milton and not, a bona fide NBA player. So I do like the supporting cast that they have around these guys. So I definitely would, you know, see it out the rest of the year as a duo. So I guess I'll go all in.
Yeah. So I'm still in on it. I'm still all in on the duo for now. My tweets might say otherwise, so don't be quoting that and sending it to me after you watch this episode. But the Sixers put me through an emotional roller coaster last night, and as they typically do.
Yep.
And for the sake of the podcast, I'm not going to overreact to what I saw last night. We got off to a good start, and then the problems, the same old problems that I saw before, showed up in the second and third quarter. And what that problem was Embiid post-ups. Mm-hmm. So with Ben Simmons on the floor, I should clarify. What was happening was, especially in the second and third quarter, Embiid would catch on, like, you know, a couple steps off the block. He likes to be a couple steps off the block so he can square up and shoot that little mid-range, which he's really good at. The issue is Ben Simmons was kind of on the opposite block. And then the double comes, and he's trying to then flash over, like, right underneath the basket. And then the defense is kind of rotating over as Joel's getting double-teamed. So the only pass he really has is, like, cross-court. And he doesn't quite have that pass. When you get a good double-team, that pass is difficult, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, like, Ben Simmons is just kind of in the way, and he's making it really easy for them to double because they can just lead from him, and then that backside defender just kind of rotates over to cover him. And Embiid turned the ball over like multiple times. And that's when the Wizards really got on the run. Bertans started lighting it up and with transition threes and stuff like that. And the Sixers went like almost 6 minutes in the third without scoring at all. Didn't even get to the foul line. They didn't score a single point for the first 6 minutes of the quarter until Ben Simmons made a jump hook. But there was where I'm like, okay, we're starting to fall into the same old issues that we've had between mm-hmm. these two. They cannot coexist on the floor. But then the fourth quarter came.
Yeah.
And the difference in the coaching showed. Here's what happened. So, one, Ben Simmons did not start the fourth quarter. Okay? So, they kept it close enough going into the fourth. Ben Simmons doesn't start, but Joel Embiid, I think he came in like with two minutes into the quarter. He comes in like 10-minute mark, and he went off. Like they played through him. They ran this action where he down screens, turns, and seals, and then they just cleared it out. And they could not double it, at least not as quickly as they were when Ben Simmons was on the floor. Because now he was surrounded by like Shake, Korkmaz, Maxey was in there for a little bit, and then Seth Curry came on. So like they had four shooters around him essentially. And he was just going to work. Thomas Bryant obviously couldn't do anything with him, whether it was back to the basket, face up, whatever. And then Ben Simmons came back in.
Yeah.
So for like one or two possessions, we saw that scene where Ben Simmons was just kind of clogging it. And what Doc kind of went to was he made Shake the point, and they went to like this horn set or this too high set. Mm-hmm. And Shake would pick a side, and Embiid would go high-low with Simmons, but with him in the high post. So he was kind of isolated at the foul line. So he had that – he still had the ability to run his face-up game, and they couldn't really double off of Simmons because Simmons is literally right under the basket. That's an easy dunk. And Embiid was still able to be effective even with Simmons on the floor when he came back in. So Doc clearly saw the issue, made the adjustment. And we were able, and Embiid was simply carried us for the most part to that win last night, even though Shake made some great plays down the stretch as well. And then we saw out of a timeout, key possession, Doc draws up a play where, you know, they've been running that horn set where Simmons cuts, and where they've been going to Embiid on a pick and pop at the foul line. Two guys running Embiid, Ben Simmons gets a drop off and a dunk on, he dunks on Thomas Bryant, and that pretty much sealed the game at that point. So, like, you just saw the adjustments and the difference. Those were things that Brett Brown was not doing last year mid-game to get us wins, right? We would get in these situations and we'd get stuck in that hole, and the Sixers would just flat out lose. They'd either be done by the time the fourth started, or late in games, they were not able to draw up those plays to get guys open. The other thing I loved was he rocked with the bench, right? He stayed with the bench when they made their run, or the bench plus Embiid. He stayed with that lineup as long as he possibly could before bringing Ben Simmons in last night. So that was encouraging. Now, they're going to have to find a way to get Tobias Harris more involved. Like, he pretty much was a spot-up shooter last night.
I think that's okay. I don't know if I don't want him as more than a spot-up shooter.
Yeah, but see, he's not a good spot-up shooter. 0 for 4 from the 3 last night. And typically when I see him in that role, it doesn't work for him. He needs a mixture of touches in order to get going, at least early on. So yeah, that's where I'm kind of thinking. Maybe, you know, kind of like some teams will run their first few sets for their third or fourth best player, right, to try to get them in a rhythm going forward so that when it's time for Tobias Harris to be a spot-up shooter, he's in a rhythm and he's going to make those shots.
Yeah.
Maybe that's something the Sixers have to look at, is like your first like 2-3 possessions might need to be some kind of play for designed for Tobias Harris to get wherever he feels comfortable in scoring. That could be something for them to look into. The other thing is Danny Green and Seth Curry are obviously going to shoot better going forward, right? You know, Danny Green was 1 for 6, 0 for 4 from three. Mm-hmm. And then Seth Curry 4 for 8, but 1 for 5 from three. Like, that's not going to be a typical night for them. But the bench production kind of supplanted that, especially from Korkmaz and Milton. And Tyrese Maxey looked pretty good in his 11 minutes of play. So I was encouraged by that. No Thybulle, though. Really didn't play at all, except for he played less than a minute. So that, to me, is kind of like, I think we have to find a way to get him in the rotation simply because he can guard everyone's best player. He's the one guy on our team that I think, other than Danny Green, that you can kind of rely on to do that. So I don't know what's going on there, but they got to find a way to get him more involved. But he also has to help himself by making some shots on the offensive end.
Well, that's the thing. And I like Thybulle. I thought that, you know, when I picked them, I picked Doc as coach of the year, and I said the Sixers were going to have a great year. I was including Thybulle in that prediction because I liked him a lot. I'm surprised. Maybe someone's going on in practice where he just can't hit anything, and Doc just didn't want to put him out there. Maybe it makes sense with, you know, Ben and Joel. You're kind of limited on shooters already. You put another guy out there who can't shoot. It makes it tough. I do think, you know, I will say coaches are underrated from a perspective of, you know, it's hard for a coach to win you a game, right? Most of the time players have to win you the game.
Yeah.
But a coach can lose you games.
Absolutely.
You understand that I'm saying there? Like, you know, if they fail to make adjustments, they can lose you games. And Brett Brown, I think, was losing them games, where I don't think Doc loses as many, if really any. Like, I think he's just more of a steady hand. Now, I will say, I love how excited you're getting about the Sixers, because I know what's coming. Yeah. I know they're going to let you down. They do play in Philadelphia. They're going to let you down eventually. So I'm waiting for that. I'm excited.
Yeah. So we'll see how the Sixers season plays out. I think they're a top 5 seed, but I think there's clearly going to be some inconsistencies there that they'll have to work out. So last but not least, we're going to stay in the East for our all in all out segment. The Celtics, who we kind of talked about in the Bucks when we talked about the Bucks. But are the Celtics the favorite in the East?
Well, I mean, I'm going to say yes, because I picked them to win the East. And I don't think that them beating the Bucks is a reason for me to jump off of that. So I'll say yes for now. I still think Tatum and Brown is the best, you know, duo, not named Kyrie and KD. But
yeah,
obviously seeing the way they performed on Tuesday night is a little bit scary to pick anybody besides them. Yeah. It's going to be tough, but I still like, you know, you had mentioned the defense of the Nets. That might be an issue. The defense of the Celtics, I do not think will be an issue with Marcus and Jaylen. And really, Tatum has actually turned into a really good defender. And then you have Tristan Thompson and Tice splitting minutes there. And Jeff Teague was a really nice pickup for them as a backup guard that, you know, that's kind of, you know, if he replaced Brad Wanamaker as their backup point guard, that's a huge upgrade. And Tristan is a huge upgrade as well. When they get Kemba back, they're probably only going to get better. So I'm rocking with the Celtics still.
Yeah, I do like how the Celtics looked. I was impressed. 122 points against a very good defensive team, is impressive. And, you know, Tatum and Brown just seem to be getting better and better as the years go by, as they should.
Yeah.
So you add Kemba into the mix of this team. Yeah, they could be pretty scary there in the East, especially throughout the regular season. Especially, you know, I had the Nets coming out in the as my Eastern Conference champions, but I don't think they'll have a better regular season than the Celtics just for chemistry and health reasons. I think the Nets will be better suited for the playoffs, but I would love to see those two teams in.
Yeah,
I would love to see those two teams in the playoffs because I don't know that there's two teams in the East that match up better than those two. Like, you know, KD versus Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Marcus Smart guarding Kyrie. I'd love to see that in the playoffs. So I'm gonna say, I'm gonna sit on a fence here. Oh, wow. I'm gonna say the Celtics will be the number one seed in the East, but I think the Nets still come out of the East in the playoffs.
Okay. No, I mean, it makes sense, right? You probably think the Nets are going to take some more time off in the regular season.
Right.
And then get ready for the playoffs.
Yeah. So I'm all in on the Celtics. They certainly look good here to start the season. All right. So that wraps it up for today's topics.
Coop, you want to do Christmas Day picks real quick?
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about Christmas Day again. So for you guys tuning in, we are recording this on Christmas Eve. That's just how we are at the All In Network. We're no days off here, except for the other 6 days of the week. But let's do Christmas Day picks quick. We'll start first game of the day. Pelicans Heat. I think this one's actually really good.
I think this might be the best game of the day from a competitive standpoint. I'll go with the Heat here. I think they got to get right, you know, coming off that loss.
Yeah, I think this is a get-right game for them. I'm interested to see what they do with Zion, though. That could be a potential matchup problem for them. So
put Bam on him, I think, right?
Well, then who guards Steven Adams?
Well.
On the boards.
Yeah, no, it's
that's weird. Yeah, so that's going to be their biggest thing. But I am going to take the Heat because I think they're actually going to pull Zion away from the basket and make him defend on the perimeter, and that will be how they kind of combat that. So I'm going to take the Heat on that one. Warriors Bucks. They got such a tough schedule to start.
Could get ugly.
Steph Curry's gonna get so much slander in the first.
They're gonna put Drew on him. It could get ugly for the Warriors. Yeah, in this one. I got Bucks.
Yeah, I'm gonna take the Bucks in that one. I'm not excited about that one, but I'm actually gonna get my Christmas Day wish of a Celtics Nets matchup because they play at 5 o'clock, third game of the day. Who you got?
This is an awesome matchup, especially considering what we just talked about and these being the two teams we like the most right now in the East. I'm going to go with the Celtics here. And reason being, I don't necessarily think that they're better per se. I am still picking them to win the East. But the Nets, while they look great in against the Warriors, we still haven't seen them together in crunch time. And that's a whole other adjustment. That's a whole different style. So I'll go with the Celtics in this one.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Celtics as well, shockingly, because, like you said, they have the chemistry already, right? Yeah. This roster really hasn't changed much other than the pieces that they added that made them better. And like you said, the crunch time, I think actually this is like the perfect stage to watch a team who hasn't figured that out yet try to figure that out. So we'll see how Steve Nash handles that situation, and for that reason I am going to take the Celtics here, but I'm not super confident in that, and obviously that game can go both ways. My biggest thing also with the Celtics is with the Nets is defensively, like, who guards, maybe KD guards Tatum, but we don't typically see that happen a lot. So, and also or maybe Joe Harris gets him. I don't love that matchup. And who guards Jaylen Brown? So, you know what I mean? I don't know that the Nets necessarily match up well, at least with the lineup that they played on opening night. If they put that
lineup, like the Celtics better, right? You put Smart on Kyrie, you know, you try to get in his head, which I think Marcus Smart could do. And then KD is going to be KD, but I do think Tatum is one of the best, you know, wing defenders in the league. I don't think people realize that all the time when they talk about him, but he is really good.
Yeah. And we could see Jaylen Brown and him, who is also an elite defender. You know, he bottled up your guy Siakam in the playoffs last year. So
okay, easy, buddy.
So we're going with Celtics there. Okay. Mavs, Lakers, both teams coming off opening up. We didn't really talk about the Lakers that much, but
I don't think we talked about the Lakers at all. I just realized that we kind of talked over that game. But LeBron looked old. Is the only analysis I had. He looked pretty old.
Yes.
I don't know if he's old or if he's just kind of still worn out and didn't get the break that he wanted.
Yeah.
I think Christmas Day, though, he turns up, him and AD, and they get this one. They need it.
Agreed. And that's interesting that both teams that were in the finals lost on opening night and not in particularly good fashion. So there is some fatigue for those teams, the two teams that played the most. And then Christmas Day, closing out with a rematch of the Western Conference semis, Clippers Nuggets.
Yeah. This one. So the Nuggets lost to the Kings in overtime. That was one of the best games yesterday to watch. I had that one up on the League Pass. So I got Clippers here. I kind of like what the Clippers are doing this year with and I have Kawhi and Paul George both on my fantasy team. I will not keep, you know, if we're playing into the playoffs, I would not keep Paul George, but it's the regular season and he normally performs pretty well. I think they come out a little bit pissed off and win.
All right, well, we're just going to agree on every pick here then because Paul George looked really good on opening night, and I think that carries over.
Yeah.
So, and also, there is an extra added motivation here for the Clippers. Obviously, they blew a 3-1 lead to this Nuggets team in the playoffs. To lose to them on Christmas Day on national TV, I think would be incredibly embarrassing, regardless of their win over the Lakers. So, And Paul George needs to play well because so does Kawhi, really. Because last time we saw those two play, against this Nuggets team, it was not pretty. So I think there's a revenge factor there, and the Clippers take that one as well.
Yeah, so we agree on all five games. So I would do a five-leg moneyline parlay with those five teams plus 842 on mybookie.ag. So you bet 100, you win 842. Oof. There you go. Mybookie.ag. Lock in those picks.
Yeah, I think I'm going to – I did actually – I already put that parlay in, except I did instead of just money line for the Bucks game, I took the 10-point spread.
Okay.
So
you think it's going to get bad?
Yeah, it's going to get bad. I mean, it's they're still bad. Like, what's Andrew Wiggins going to do with Chris Middleton on him? Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's going to get ugly. So it's just – I took the spread in that one just to kind of help with the odds of the parlay. So
okay, yeah.
I'm hoping that hits and gives me some big money.
Nice.
But, guys, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. We hope everyone, by the time you hear this, is either having a Merry Christmas or had a Merry Christmas. Or if you celebrate other holidays, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, whatever you celebrate, we hope you're enjoying that holiday that you do partake in. We appreciate you guys tuning in to the 60th episode of the All In Podcast. We will see you guys again next week.
Thanks, guys. Peace.